America faces a question that will define public safety for a generation. If local leaders fail to protect their citizens, should a president step in? Now, across the country, violent crime continues to shake major cities. And now, President Trump is pushing an aggressive, high-visibility strategy, deploying National Guard support to assist overwhelmed local law enforcement. Now, some call it necessary. Some call it unconstitutional. And many Democrat governors and mayors are refusing to cooperate. But is America safer when Washington stands back? Or are they safer when Washington steps in? Today, we break down the politics, the power struggle, and the stakes for public safety. I'm Skynell Hughes, and you're watching Perspective, Streets Under Guard, Trump's Crime Crackdown. You know, for years, violent crime has risen in some of the nation's largest urban areas. Robberies, carjackings, open-air drug markets, gang activity, and repeat offenders cycling through a broken system. Residents are tired. Business owners are furious. Families are scared. And police departments are overwhelmed, understaffed, and often restricted by local policies that put ideology over safety. Now, the America First movement has long argued one simple point. A government's first duty is to protect its citizens. And now, President Trump is proposing a dramatic solution, mobilizing federal resources. This includes National Guard units, where legally permitted to support state and local authorities who request assistance in restoring order. Now, to the America First base, this is leadership. This is decisive action. This is a president saying if cities are in crisis, Washington will not stand idly by. But not everyone agrees. Many Democrat governors and mayors insist the federal government should stay out of local affairs, even when violence spirals out of control. They argue this is a state issue. They argue the Guard is not the answer. They claim federal involvement is political, not protective. On today's show, we are going to examine the core questions. Is this strategy effective? Is it constitutional? And why are some leaders resisting federal help when their own communities demand action? Because at the end of the day, this isn't about politics. It's about Americans who deserve to walk outside without fear. This is the debate. This is the clash, and this is the moment where public safety meets presidential power. Joining us today on Perspective to discuss is Brian Stahl, Texas policeman and candidate for Congress, and Lionel of Lionel Media. Thanks for joining me, gentlemen, on this.
Thank you.
So I'm going to start with you, Lionel, on this. How did major cities reach a point where local law enforcement agencies felt overwhelmed, understaffed, or restricted by local policies?
Scotty, was by design. That was part of the script. They want this to happen. They want there to be a complete and total breakdown. They want this. In fact, anything that allows them to say President Trump's not doing a good job works for them. It's also part and parcel of this complete and total fracture of this. But Scotty, let's make sure we understand something. Under the Constitution, of which I hold very proudly, this is provided for absolutely, specifically, and I can go through it, in more clauses, in more statutes than you can imagine. This is not a rogue president. This is not something that's off the reservation. This is by design. It has historical precedent. And the president is not only right, he is mandated under the Constitution. And the Take Care Clause, one of my favorites, which says the president shall take care to make sure that all laws are implemented. So let it be known, let there be no doubt whatsoever. Not only is he mandated to do this and allowed to do it, he must do this.
And that's the thing, Lionel, because legal and constitutional, these tools were put in place for a president to support and reinforce public safety when the state or local government requests assistance. But what about when they don't request assistance? Can he still step in?
Absolutely. Article 2, the Take Care Clause. Article 4, the Guarantee Clause. Article 1, Section 8, where he can apply the militia. Article 1, Section 8, again, where he can organize the militia. The Insurrection Act of 1807. 10 U.S.C. 252 allowing the president to deploy forces. 10 U.S.C. 253, the same thing. It goes down. 10 U.S.C. 254 allows the president to proclaim and ordering insurgents to fight. I mean, I'm not going to bore you with the statistics, but it is, there are so many. The drafters of the Constitution made it possible because the idea is that we're all for one, one for all. And it's not political. And by the way, let me also say something very quickly. When a local governor or mayor or anybody comes in and says, here's how you can subvert ICE, which is, by the way, an extension of his federal will, that to me is aiding and abetting actual insurrection and sedition itself. So he has the tools to deal with that. Individuals who stop his plenary power, who stop his inherent power. So he is completely armed, and I beg him, let loose the dogs of war.
Well, that's interesting. Brian, I got to bring you in on this conversation and see how you feel about this, because one of the big places, obviously, has been Texas down at the border that you've seen National Guard troops being played. What role do you feel like the National Guard should be playing when it comes to supporting police without crossing constitutional boundaries or replacing local control, which I think some local authorities might be in fear of?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with Lionel more. He said it, very nicely about the power that the president has, and what he's been doing on the southern border down here has made, incredible strides for us safety-wise. And, they're not taking over cities. They're not enforcing any laws. What they're basically doing is there another set of eyes and another set of ears? And one of, the first portion of use of force is officer presence or command presence. And when you have military personnel that are assisting with local law enforcement, it helps us significantly, and it does reduce crime. We've seen it in Texas, and I think what he's doing, not only here in Texas and down on the border, but throughout the cities of this nation, is something that has needed to be done for a long time.
So, Brian, do you feel like that your fellow former law enforcement colleagues, that they are feeling this to be welcomed, or are they also sort of feeling like this is the president stepping in saying, you didn't do your job, so now I've got to do it?
No, it's very welcoming. And, we don't feel like they're trying to take our job or they're doing it because we're not doing a good enough job. The biggest thing is that law enforcement has been understaffed, undertrained, and underfunded for so long. And it's very hard to get people that want to be police officers anymore, especially after, the pandemic and a lot of the riots that we saw across the nation. There's not as many applicants. There's not as many people willing to do this job. So we need the help. We need the support. And if the president can supplement manpower with, military troops and other federal agents, and we welcome it with open arms.
Well, it's interesting because, Lionel, you do have some Democrat governors, especially the governor of Illinois, and mayors who are refusing assistance, even when the community is saying please and they're demanding stronger response to violent crime. Why? Who has more of a legal precedence, the president to overstep the governor, or does he have to wait until the governor actually invites those troops into those cities?
Oh, no, the president. This is the supremacy clause. Mm-hmm. And by the way, just one more thing about law enforcement. You know, people loved the old days to be cops. And there's another problem that we're seeing right now. Raise the specter of George Soros. You know, Scotty, there's something called restorative justice. Let everybody, please, I beg you, please, go and look up restorative justice. And they use words like this, non-retributive justice, non-carceral justice. You see, Scotty, if somebody were to, God forbid, do something physically horrible to you, or your family, or your daughters, or your children, You must sit down with them. And we must understand, Scotty, the reason for this. Forget about your wounds. Let's go and ask the assailant, why did you do this? And let's bring you together. This is called restorative justice, non-retributive, non-carceral, no bail, no jail. This is an absolute specific implementation, not only to cause mayhem, but to release people. I don't know where you are, but in New York City where I am, I dream of the day where I can buy bath soap without having to hit a buzzer on aisle 5 so that some security agent doesn't open up some cage where the shoplifting has taken place, where nobody did anything, and it all started after COVID. COVID was the beta test. COVID was the ground zero. That's where it hit the fan, and we have been trying to get back. So let me tell you something, Scotty. I don't want to be, God forbid, I don't want to be extreme here, but we're in a revolution. This is a full-blown revolution and a fight to reclaim our cities and our law and order.
So that's the thing, Brian, and I mentioned in the opening that you're running for Congress. You're actually on the campaign trail right now. And yet you have Democrats saying, no, we don't want to bring in National Guard troops. We think our communities, I don't know if they actually say that their communities are safe. I have to ask you, Brian, on this one. Let me go back to you, Lionel, on this. If you actually, who has more of a precedence in this? Could you ever see a governor, like what we're seeing in Illinois happen, actually say, nope, I'm going to bring in my state guard to fight back against the National Guard that President Trump's coming in? Who has, you know, how does that play out?
Ooh, that's called civil war. Scotty, remember the old days or during the times of desegregation? Remember when George Wallace stood in front of the schools and said, segregation now, segregation forever? And what did Presidents Kennedy and Eisenhower do? They said, excuse me, get out of the way, you pipsqueak. And they brought in the 101st Airborne Division, the 82nd Airborne. This is Little Rock. Kennedy did it. Eisenhower, Bush did it. No, this is, you cannot do this. Because remember, the beautiful part about the separation of powers and the balance of power is that when one is not holding up their own, somebody else can come in and exert theirs. This is, let me just say this again. Scotty, this is axiomatic. And the Democrats are freaking out because remember, in Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser said, hey, I kind of like this. Maureen Dowd, that arch radical lib loon, she says, you know, I kind of like this. If you've been outside of Union Station, you say, this is terrific. People in D.C. loved it. Oh, so this is what law and order looks like. Don't kid yourself. People who live in these cities beg for law and order. Nobody ever thrives in disorder and instability.
Well, and you're hearing the same thing out of Memphis. You're hearing people beg for it over North Carolina after you've had several different assaults on their public transportation. I want to continue this conversation. So stick around, Lionel and Brian Stahl, because when we come back, how bad is this crime problem in America's major cities? And why are some local leaders actually rejecting assistance? We're going to break it all down right after a short break. Welcome back to Streets Under Guard. We're examining the America First push to support local law enforcement with federal assistance. This is an idea President Trump argues is essential to restoring peace and stability in communities where crime has become unmanageable. Now, let's bring in our guests, and we want to dig into the key questions shaping the future of public safety in America. Back with us is Brian Stahl, Texas policeman and candidate for Congress, and Lionel of Lionel Media. Thank you, gentlemen, for holding through with us. You know, Brian, I'm going to start with you. What are the political risks and rewards for President Trump in taking such a bold, high-visibility approach, truly unprecedented, to urban crime?
You know, I really don't see any sort of political risk in this. I think it's nothing but reward, and I think that we're seeing that across the nation with the amount of support that he's getting from, you know, the vast majority of people. You know, we talked about it a little bit on the show where, you know, there's a lot of people that are begging for this. They're asking for help. They want to feel safe. They want to feel secure. Their local law enforcement don't have the ability to do so and protect them because they're understaffed or undertrained or under budget. And so what President Trump is doing in supporting the entire nation is something that I think is going to be, very beneficial for him in the long run.
You know, Lionel, on this, I think about trickle-down economics. You almost think about trickle-down safety on this. So, Lionel, talk to me about how might federal involvement, when they are invited or uninvited, how it actually can impact day-to-day safety for residents, businesses, and local police officers who are on the ground. What are the benefits, and are there any drawbacks?
Order, safety, the cessation of wild, frenetic. Let me take you folks back. I'm not going to bring back the Grover Cleveland Pullman strike. I mean, that was in all the papers. But let me take you back to a time, you might remember this, it was April of 1992 after the Rodney King verdict. Guess who sent in the Marines? Guess who sent in George W. Bush? It was the Insurrection Act. Remember that? He sent in the 7th Infantry Division and the 1st Marine Division to L.A. to quell the riots. And Pete Wilson, now remember, one of the things, Scotty, I know you being, and Brian as well, being politically astute, nobody ever wants to act like they need help. because it sounds like you're politically impotent or you don't have enough. So you kind of say, no, I don't need your help. You know, meanwhile, as remember the Korean store owners on top of their buildings with rifles, and George Bush said, no problem, after the Rodney King verdict. And remember what that was? That was a civil rights movement. That was like BLM and George Floyd on steroids. And George Bush said, I'm not asking you your opinion. This is mayhem. And nobody questioned it. But today, because this is President Trump, he could cure cancer. He could do anything. And it's an encroachment. And the thing is, Scotty and Brian, I think the American public is so tired of this. We're like immune to it. Go, yeah, you don't like Trump. He's a bad guy. But think about this. What country, what county, what city thrives in disorder? And let me also tell you something. Do you know who really wants law and order? African Americans, the people of color, and poor people, the people in urban areas. They are begging for this. It's always some white guy in some gated community with a Land Rover who talks about all this stuff. Remember during COVID, you know, Black Lives Matter. People put signs in their front lawn hoping that when the rioters came, they would ward off like a talisman. I think we've forgotten George Floyd. I'm here in New York, and when the plywood went up, I always ask myself, how do they know ahead of time that there's going to be rioting? Why is this so coordinated? Now, you may think I'm paranoid. You may think I'm a conspiracist, but I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a conspiracy analyst, as Gore Vidal said. And we know, look, it's time for us to take off the gloves and stop pretending that what is happening isn't happening. We know damn well. And Brian, whatever I can do to support you, maybe the best thing I can do is not to support you, knowing who I am. But God bless you for trying to do something.
And that's the thing. I think leaders do get kind of dismayed from doing it because you see the same broken system. And you see where the most crime is, the highest districts keep reelecting the same people. Not once, not twice, but for decades. They keep those same people and nothing changes within that district. You know, Brian, I have to wonder, though, at some point, whether it's an administration change or they just have to pull out, the National Guard is going to leave. The State Guards are going to leave these areas. They are going to leave the borders. What happens then? Do you think people get enough of a taste of what it feels like to be safe that they try to encourage it within their leaders? Or how do those city councils deal with when those national support ends up having to be pulled back?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously they are going to leave, but I hope that we have enough of, you know, new policies and procedures in place, and we are able to make enough of a change within the entire country and within the smaller communities as well, to where, you know, the vast majority of the people, they see the value in feeling safe. They see the value of having, you know, or being able to walk at night and without being assaulted. And especially for law enforcement, it's going to help us in the future, I think. And but to kind of answer your second part of your question, you know, we need to understand that, you know, the leaders of these cities and these mayors and these governors and whatever the case may be that are pushing against President Trump, we need to do something, and we need to have a change of guard. We need to get some new blood in there. We need to have people with a different perspective. And we need to understand that, you know, what the president is doing is ultimately making our nation safer. And it's got a bunch of support, not only from citizens, but from law enforcement. And then listen, we're not too proud to ask for help in law enforcement. If we need help, we're going to ask for it. And, you know, we love what he's doing for us, especially here in Texas. And then I see it across the country and talk to other officers across the country and talk to other political figures across the country. And, you know, they all love it as well. I think a lot of the people that are pushing against it, you know, behind closed doors, they may be applauding it, but publicly they're pushing against it because they have this, you know, image to uphold. And talking to some members in Congress, you know, I hear that a lot, that, you know, behind closed doors, they say something totally different because they are seeing a vast improvement within their communities or within their state or their cities, and they're reaping the benefits as well. People want to stay there. People want to live there. People want to raise families there. They don't feel like they have to get pushed out and go to a safer place because, you know, all the things that President Trump's doing.
No, I completely understand that. You know, there's two parts to this, though, and I think that, you know, we put a lot of focus, obviously, on deterrent and cracking down on crime at the moment that's happening. But, Lionel, there's also the second part, which we're seeing the majority of these are repeat offenders. These are not first-time offenders that are getting arrested. So what alternative strategies are America First leaders, do you feel, proposing or should propose beyond guard deployment, such as stronger sentencing, prosecutorial reform, or expanding policing authority?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, going back in the second, go back to our friends of the Constitution, we need to implement the militia under the Second Amendment. Remember, we always talk about, does the Second Amendment mean a militia? Well, it's there. You know, in Philly, one of my favorite founding fathers is Tench Cox, who basically said, we never gave this up. Let me say this again, folks, America, you don't have to ask permission to protect yourself. I don't have to ask the police for us to have our own militia. That's number one. Number two, we need to have somebody like our version of it. When I say our, whatever, I'm not even sure who we are, but whatever the sentient part of this country is, we've got to have our version of George Soros. We have to go out. This guy put, how many DAs he and his PACs absolutely supported to destroy individual law and order. We have to have our Buford Pusser or our whoever it is. We have to do this. And we have to also implement carry laws and back to the Second Amendment. We have to take this back ourselves because, remember, I want people to fear us. Let me just say something very quickly. During the first color revolution or whatever it was in Egypt, there was a time when Hosni Mubarak said, "All right, folks, go door to door." And his soldiers told him, "Excuse me, these people have AK-47s. We're not going to go door to door. I want criminals to fear me as much as I fear them." So a lot of this is self-help. And again, it's here in the Constitution. It's the Second Amendment. Let's saddle up, boys. We can do this.
Well, not only do criminals fear you, Lionel, I know a lot of Republicans and conservatives that fear you as well. Hate to be in your target wrath, and that's what you aim for. I want to thank you both for joining us. Brian Stahl, congressional candidate in Texas, former law enforcement officer, and Lionel of Lionel Media, definitely check out both of their work. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
You know, America deserves safety. America deserves stability. And America deserves leadership that refuses to accept chaos as the new normal. The debate over deploying the National Guard is about far more than just tactics. It's about responsibility. Who protects the American people when local leaders fail? Who steps in when ideology gets in the way of common sense? And who dares to make hard decisions when communities are hurting? The America First answer, it's simple. A strong nation protects its citizens, every last one of them. Whether or not cities choose to cooperate, the message is clear. Lawlessness is not freedom. Violence is not justice. And government at every level must prioritize the safety of its people above political calculation. The future of American cities hangs in the balance, and the choices we make now will determine whether our streets collapse into disorder or return to stability. I'm glad you're here for this conversation. This has been Perspective. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes. Thank you for watching.